Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have got a most intriguing program for you today. And I say it's intriguing because it causes a lot of conversation whenever it's brought up as a topic. We're going to be talking about crop circles. My very special guest is Freddie Silva. He has an utterly fabulous book called Secrets in the Field, The Science and Mysticism of Crop Circles. Freddie, welcome to the show.
Hello, Donna.
I am so delighted to have you as a guest. When I first became aware of your material, I thought, okay, I'm just going to read this for the heck of it, because so frequently anything that's mentioned about crop circles ends up being in the woo-woo category. And you did an absolutely superb job, and I'm not saying this just to be nice to you. I really mean it. You have done an absolutely superb job of dealing with this fascinating phenomena in a very down-to-earth, easy-to-understand way. And I want my audience to know that your background is very different from one would, from what one would expect with an investigator of crop circles. You've been an art director, you're
That's
a writer,
right.
and a photographer, and your primary work has always been in graphic design and advertising. But this was something that was pushed into your life because of something you saw on television, and this occurred in 1990. Tell us about your journey and how this began.
Well, I've always had a very long foot stuck in the esoteric field. I mean, I was drawing pyramids when I was three, so I think I had a bit of an unusual childhood even back then. And I think it was because of the forces of commercialism that drew me into the world of graphic design and advertising. And oddly enough, someone actually asked me many years ago how I did get involved in all of this, and I said, well, I really don't know. And they said, well, what do you do for a living? And I said, well, I take 40 pages of written information, and I try to condense that into a symbol, which can be a headline or a visual, and I try to sell that to a skeptical public. And they said, well, what do you do now? And I said, well, now I take a symbol, and I extract 40 pages of information, and I still have to sell it to a skeptical public. So in a way, it's actually given me fantastic training to get this phenomenon across, because all you hear in the media is just, you know, it's hoaxing, it's, you know, UFO stuff. And there's a lot of science behind it, which we don't get to see, but the moment that really sort of turned my life around on it was when I was in Chicago ironing a shirt, minding my own business, and I had the television on with the sound turned off. And I saw this, it may have been a news program or something, but there was this visual that came on television, and it showed this incredible symbol in the middle of a wheat field in England, and I just knew exactly what it was when I saw it. I mean, it turned my life completely 180 degrees, because I knew what that symbol was, but I couldn't actually rationalize it. And from that point on, you know, my inquiry into the science behind the whole crop circle phenomenon and also the mystical side of it began to take over my life, and slowly, I think I can pretty much date the demise of my career to that moment.
Now, you're a British citizen, and you've got Portuguese parentage, and at one time you were married to a Canadian, and you live where at this time?
Oh, I'm now in Portland, Maine, and I've lived in America for 18 years, so I have quadruple nationality, I think. I'm working on a fifth one, just for the hell of it.
You bring out some interesting points. You say that there are 10,000 crop circles that have appeared since 1980, and there's those that have made them, but you say these are 10,000 that nobody has an explanation for how they were designed. And this that primarily 90% of them occur in England, and 25 other countries have experienced them. They've been here in the U.S. as well. Why do you think that England has had the predominance of the circles? And I have to tell you, the photography you have in here, some of these designs, is breathtakingly beautiful.
Well, thank you. In fact, the data has actually shifted since the publication of the book. It's actually up to 29 countries now, and I think we've got 11,000 designs. And I think as more people around the world begin to figure out who to tell about this phenomenon, the more the chains keep getting expanded. I mean, we now know that the phenomenon's been around since at least 1678, and there's a very good document of it in the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, England. But we still get about 70% of the world's crop circles in southern England. The second biggest concentration is in the Canadian prairie and the American prairie. In fact, today we actually have more genuine circles in North America than we do in England. So it's funny how these things seesaw through time. But the big connection that we were trying to make was, why were they happening over there? And it seemed pretty obvious from the outset that all the crop circles were always appearing in the vicinity of ancient sacred sites, as if someone was trying to get our attention. And England just happens to be the one place in the world where we do have tens of thousands of ancient sacred sites still remaining. So that was the first big clue. There was a connection to the ancient past. And since then, we've figured out that a lot of the esoteric and mechanical wisdom that's encoded in things like Stonehenge, pyramids, and even Gothic cathedrals is actually encoded in the genuine designs. So that was the first clue. They wanted to get our attention to the ancient past. The second connection was the fact that you had, if you're going to communicate this information to the population of the Earth, I'm not saying this is extraterrestrial by any means, or at least not extraterrestrial in the way that we consider extraterrestrial. You'd want to get this information across in a place in the world where they speak a universal language, and English certainly is that language. We also have a country in England where we have a lot of access to the countryside, unlike in the States where it's mostly privately owned. In most of England, you have a right of access to just about any field over there. So it makes the study of the phenomenon much more easy to do and to disseminate. And thirdly, and this is the real science behind it, the crop circles are appearing in southern England, which sits on the world's deepest chalk aquifer. And the other big concentration appears in the Canadian prairie, which happens to be a limestone aquifer. And limestone is a chemical twin of chalk. And we wondered about this for a long, long time until we realized that there's a homeopathic thing taking place here. Because if we could prove that the crop circles were electromagnetic, and we have done so, then it means that any contact with water will encode information in the water. Now, this has been proved by Jacques Benveniste in France, who actually tested a lot of the samples that we took out of crop circles and found that the water is encoded with an energy form, which means that this encoded frequency is basically leaching through the aquifers, and it's going into the streams and the rivers around the world. And the more diluted it becomes, the stronger it gets. Which means by the homeopathic method, the crop circles are actually encoding the water that's going all around the world. And, of course, that goes into our drinking water. It goes into our body, which is also two-thirds water. So you can draw the conclusions from there. It's a very well-planned system of communication which is touching every living organism in the world.
You make a statement in your book, facts can be unwelcome because they have the power to disturb. But if you're open to facts, you are encouraged to seek and to discover the universal wisdom which, ultimately and ironically, already reigns within you. And you entered the pursuit of looking for facts with an open objective, and you said an atheistic mind in 1990. Have you changed any your thoughts? And how has this 17 years of experience affected your life and your belief system?
I mean, it's I was brought up as a Catholic. I had no choice. I was born in Portugal, and they'll beat you up unless you declare to become a Catholic very early on. So for me, the concept of religion was very scary. I couldn't really connect the concept of a loving God with the religion that was being taught at the time, and I still don't. So for me, becoming an atheist was very, very easy once I left that system. So once I began to actually get involved with the circles, and the, and I'm talking about the genuine phenomenon now, and having unusual experiences and seeing things between two worlds, and having also some unusual cases where, let's just say there was a lot of out-of-body stuff that was going on, and I went in there not really expecting any of this. I mean, it just happened, and the more I began to experience this, the more I realized that what I was in contact with was a greater form of consciousness, and it was very loving, it was very guiding. It still is to this day in my life. I mean, I can hear it all around me all the time. And that cannot help but change you, change your whole focus of awareness. And so for me, the concept of God now is a very positive one, but it's very non-denominational. It's not attached to any religious form. It just is. It's a creative principle. And that's pretty much what I go around and teach around the world. It's that it comes from personal experience, and it affects your life in every single degree, because you begin to examine your actions, your purpose in the world. You begin to actually connect with what you came here to do as a soul. And slowly you watch a lot of your friends sort of leaving. You begin to acquire new friends, thankfully. And, you know, you begin to lose your spouse and your job and, you know, all the things that sort of maintain your connection to the physical world. So you've got to be pretty brave. You've got to be pretty thick-skinned, because when you're not really expecting it to happen, and it happens very quickly, then changes do come about very quickly. But the upside of it is, as I call it, the fringe benefits are incredible, because what you get out of it is faith. And that's something that's very important to everyone, and I totally recommend everyone develops a good dose of faith, because that's what the answer to the to life really is. It's about your personal journey, where you're going, and what you do with it that's important.
Well, it sounds to me like this has had a significant effect on your thinking and on your belief system. I'd like to go back to what you said a moment ago. You said there are excellent records about cropped circles appearing in the 1600s. Tell us about those records.
Yeah, there's a couple of cases, actually. The first one is a very famous one called the Mowing Devil, which shows this devil figure with horns taking a scythe to a whole field of crops, and it's a woodcut. The problem is, and this is all over the internet, and I'm just trying to sort of appease a misconception, the crops in crop circles are actually not cut. They're actually bent about an inch above the soil, and they're very undamaged. So I will probably sense that this woodcut has nothing to do with the real phenomenon. However, 2 years later, I read in the Natural History of Staffordshire in England by the director of the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, which is a very high seat of learning, some very interesting things called witches' circles and devil's rings, where the bent, the plants are bent without damage, where the soil and the plants have a musty, rancid odor as if cooked from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
These are things that we actually find in the crop circles today, where we actually have discovered that an incredible heating element, which seems to boil the water in about 1 nanosecond and creates charring on the outside of the stems of the plants and induces the soil to become very dry in a short space of time. All of these things are being sort of generated in this book, and it comes with diagrams of shapes in fields in tall grass and barley, where the shapes are not just circular, but they are squares within circles and even hexagons. And this begins to hark back to the days of the modern phenomenon, which shows that there are geometric forms, which are not always circular, imprinted in the fields, and again showing exactly the same notes that we find within 1678. So we're probably talking about the very same phenomenon. And someone actually sent me some information that goes back to the 16th century, where it describes the origin of maypole dancing, which is the fertility dance done around the Feast of Beltane,
mm-hmm.
which honors the sun. And they talk about the origins of the patterns that they actually create in their dances around the maypole. And to quote this text from 1570, I believe, it talks about how we write down the shapes of the patterns for the dancers from the shapes, from the geometric shapes we find in the tall grass first thing in the morning. Geometric shapes in tall grasses first thing in the morning sounds to me like it's much more than a fungus that's occurring here. We're probably talking about a very, very similar subject indeed.
Well, the programming that have been on television have sometimes been featured, because I've seen programs regarding the crop circles, and there have been the stories about individuals who purposefully went out and made crop circles. In fact, you have a story about the military that went out and created a false circle to discredit what was going on. And I'd like for you to share that story.
Yeah, back in 1988, when the phenomenon really was getting a lot of media attention, and there's a lot of science behind it as well. I mean, one of the original people who was actually looking at the phenomenon was an ex-NASA engineer, and he was totally fascinated by how the plants could be bent without damage and how they had electromagnetic principles inside these designs, as if there's a kind of shielding effect around them. So by this time, the media had assembled, a lot of scientists came from all around the world, and they all stationed themselves on a hilltop above a field in England where they had a lot of cases. And incredibly, on the second night, when everybody had actually gone home to get some sleep, people discovered a series of very abrupt shapes in the fields right under the field in question. And when the media sort of got hold of this, they obviously rushed out. They tried to get the researchers back to the field first thing in the morning, which they did. And hurriedly, they said, well, obviously there's something that's happened here overnight. Let's go and take a look at this. And before they were able to actually analyze the equipment and the night vision cameras that had captured people actually making this overnight, the media discovered that there were horoscope games and wooden crosses left in these very rough designs. And they basically went off and told the entire world that it was all a big prank. Mm-hmm. And later it was discovered that the British military on that night had actually gone out and made them. But incredibly, the next day, there was a 600-foot pictogram that appeared, and the military were actually out analyzing that with small helicopters. So it makes you wonder what was going on. In the meantime, all the researchers had gone home. The equipment was all packed up, except for a small group of Japanese tourists, Japanese scientists, who'd come all the way from Japan, and they figured they might as well stay for the whole 2 weeks and see if anything else would happen. Well, right on the very last night, they did actually capture on film a small swirl motion in the crop about a mile away from the camp. It took about 15 seconds to make this wonderful swirl in the crop, but there, right under their very equipment, was the first capture of a crop circle happening in on camera equipment. And under the terms which they had made with the BBC in England, they had to hand over any thing that was caught on tape. Now, they did this, although they did make some copies of the tape, which was very fortunate of them, because the BBC proceeded to lose the tapes. And I can tell you, working in advertising, that just does not happen. I mean,
right.
It would be the equivalent in America of someone, during the Kennedy assassination, losing all the film equipment. It just does not happen. So luckily, the film does survive. And that you can just see a swirl motion in the crop in less than 15 seconds, which does back up the eyewitness accounts. And there are at least 80 of them around the world which do mention that these things, regardless of size, always happen within 15 seconds.
Fascinating. You talk in your book about Roger Sear, and it was the summer of 1927, and he called the crop circle Witch's Rings. And he noticed a number of different phenomena going on at the time. He had seen this before. Tell us what he experienced when he was doing this.
Ooh, now you're really testing my memory banks there.
Well, he talked about his needle of his compass going berserk.
Yes, and there was a lot of magnetization as well of metal objects. In fact, if I remember correctly, there was some very interested local people that came around to see that design. And apart from the fact that the compass of his needle didn't point north, which is something that we've actually discovered in latter-day research, where the Earth's local magnetic field not only shifts 4 degrees in genuine crop circles, sometimes it actually shifts as much as 180 degrees above the ground, and airplanes and helicopters actually refuse to fly over a lot of these designs now because it interferes with their equipment.
Oh, that's
so clearly there's something very electromagnetic going on, but at the time there was also people who took bicycles into these designs in 1927 and pocket with knives, and they found that they were either magnetically charged to the point where you could stand knives on their ends, or bicycles actually discharged electrical particles. So clearly there's an electromagnetic phenomenon at work even back then.
He also noticed that there was a smell, not unlike what you mentioned a moment ago, that there was a lot of static electricity. They give each other shocks. And that after this one circle in 1927 that they had seen appeared, and he had a buddy with him, a second one appeared, but both he and his buddy ended up going home with very, very bad headaches. And then 8 years after this, in Essex, there was a 10-year-old boy who witnessed a crop circle manifesting right in front of him, and there was an adult with him, and they blamed it on the devil's twist. You know, we always have people that come up with these ridiculous things, but they wouldn't believe what was right in front of their eyes. Of course, the kid's saying, "Wow, did you see what we just saw?" And there was nothing there doing it but this wind.
It is amazing, isn't it? There have been some people who have actually seen tubes of light. In fact, a few years ago, I actually was standing on a hill and I felt the need to take a photograph across the valley. And when I got the picture back, I saw tubes of light. And as a professional photographer, I know that there's only a couple of ways in which you can actually do that on film. And those things were not available at the time. So at the same time, I discovered 2 days later, a woman was actually standing a few hundred yards in front of that tube of light at exactly the same moment I took the photograph 6 miles away. We've had police who've actually seen these tubes of light, and one farmer in England who actually saw it during a rainy day. And he describes it as being very physical, because not only was this tube coming out of the clouds like a cookie cutter, it was swirling the plants right in front of him, and you could actually see the rain bouncing off the edges of this tube, and then it just retracted itself in about 15 seconds. So there definitely is some kind of energy form there, which is not just sonic, but it's also electromagnetic, and it does operate on things which obviously do bear some examination.
Your photographs. And, of course, your book is loaded with all kinds of drawings, designs, and colored photographs. For those of you just tuning in, this is Donna Sebo. Freddie Silva is my guest. We're talking about crop circles. His fascinating book is called Secrets in the Field. And I can tell you, it is very, very comfortable to read. You're not going to feel like you have to be a physics professor to understand this. And it's about the science and mysticism of crop circle. And it's a mystery. It really is, because we are aware of certain things, and with our technology, we've been able to answer maybe a few questions, but it seems like the more questions that are answered, they create even more questions, because it's out of the box of what we expect. These designs are absolutely spectacular. And you feel that there's a very strong psychic connection between the crop circles and people. Why do you think that's the case?
I think that ultimately what they're trying to do is get us to expand ourselves as human beings. I mean, all around the world there are the indigenous cultures that are teaching us about the end of the fourth world and the moving into the fifth world. And I believe this is all part of that change, and it's either biological, molecular, or psychological, and maybe all three of those. And I think that there's no argument in that we look at the world around us right now, and it's in a state of chaos. We literally are going from one level of existence into another. And part of the concept of why the crop circles are here is to try to get us to move forward, and it's doing so by giving us technological information, but it's also getting us to look at ourselves as human beings, at the temple that is the human body, and reminding us that we've lost a connection to the unseen side of life for about 400 years. And at least since the advent of the Roman Catholic Church, for certain, who actually tried to downplay our ability to connect with the invisible world, and this is, of course, very well documented. So I think part of the psychic connection and a lot of the experiments that have been done in trying to communicate with the circle makers on different levels and having them reply either physically or psychically, they're trying to get us to be much more comfortable with who we are as people and with us as souls. And as we do that, as we work more towards an intuitive side of our nature, the more we begin to appreciate that our thoughts really do shape our world. And you look at the work that Masaru Emoto has done with water and how our intent is able to change the crystalline structure of water, you begin to see how science is beginning to back this up as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving us permission to be much more comfortable with who we are as people and to wash away a couple of thousand years of religious dogma that has tried to strip us away from the world of God, which has always been posted in the last couple of thousand years as being outside of ourselves, when in fact it was always within us to begin with. And I think ultimately that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get us to realize, you know, we're much more than the sum of our parts.
You have a photograph that I'm really intrigued with. It's the old Barry Hill Fort in Sherhill. And in the photograph, you have this phenomenal crop circle. And then in the background, up on a hill, is this beautiful white horse that is in the ground itself. Tell us about that area of the country.
It's the white horses carved out of the chalk soil is a unique feature of southern England, and some of these horses go back many hundreds of years, but there's one in particular which is up at Uffington and not too far away from Oldbury. It actually resembles a stylistic dragon, and it's interesting that it should actually be flying or carved on the hill above Dragon Hill, which is one of the major repositories of Earth energy at that particular location. In fact, there are coils of magnetism which rise up into this hill right under it. Now, the dragon has always been symbolized in association with Earth energies, and the church obviously tried to downplay that by juxtaposing the image of St. Michael spearing the dragon in many of its church windows. Originally, this was the symbol of harnessing the Earth energy, not killing it. It was all about harnessing and putting this in a place where we'd actually could actually use this energy for our own benefit. So it's interesting that the crop circles are appearing beside these ancient markers of Earth energy. But where they appear, they also happen to appear at the crossroads of the Earth's magnetic lines of energy, just as Stonehenge, just as pyramids, and just as every other temple on Earth. So there exists that connection as well. But being crop circles and being like hieroglyphs, they also have a different level of interpretation, because the white horse happens to be the Western equivalent of the Sphinx. Now, the Sphinx in Eastern tradition is the keeper of knowledge. It sits atop the reputed Hall of Records in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So the horse in Western mythology is also the keeper of the secrets. And this is why the Knights Templar had an emblem of two Templars riding a horse. Now, if you look at the word horse etymologically, you go back to its roots of cavalo, which is an old Portuguese and Latin word for horse. If you take the root of that word, horse, and take it all the way back to the word cav, it means cave, which means both to dig below the surface and also to go within. And that's, of course, exactly what the crop circles are trying to do. They want us to dig below the surface of apparent meaning, to go under the obvious meaning and look at the actual information encoded inside them. And as you're doing that, you're also going within yourself and going into the underworld, you know, the belly of the pregnant Earth Mother,
mm-hmm.
in order to immerse yourself in ancient wisdom. And when you immerse out of this cave, you should actually come out with your eyes open and completely full of wisdom, which, of course, anybody that's approached this subject of crop circles seems to do very, very well. And, of course, I'm a pretty good example of it, I hope.
Well, I would say you are, and your material is fascinating. Talk to us about what you describe. Hi, I'm sorry, we had a slight interruption there. I wanted you to address the terminology of acoustical alchemy. Sound and tone seem to have quite a bit of an impact.
Yes, this is actually the most important chapter in the book, apart from the final chapter, which I will not reveal, because it's very important. It's like a Harry Potter book. It's a complete secret until you read it. But the sound chapter actually forms the pivotal moment of the book, because it really underpins the connection between the mysticism and the science of these designs, Because when we look at how sound actually works and how it manipulates physical substances and how it works with the mind's brainwave patterns, you begin to actually explain not only the psychological features that happen to people in crop circles, such as sudden inability to know where you are, the sudden movement of the pineal gland in order to get you to have heightened states of awareness. It also creates healing, which we've had hundreds and hundreds of cases in the crop circles, including one case of a person who had a retinal cancer healed within a month. We also begin to know that the physiological features of the crop circles can all be explained by sonic resonance, because the way that the shapes are created can be accounted for by ultrasound, which is sound above the human hearing range.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more, the higher the frequency of ultrasound, the more you can actually shape ultrasound to work like a laser, and you can actually create very fine detail and complex patterns using that kind of technique. And of course, we have detected these signature frequencies in the crop circles, and the higher the frequencies, the more complex the shapes. Now, conversely, at the other end of the scale, we have infrasound, and below the human hearing range, infrasound influences molecular structures to the point where it can actually deform chromosomes, and this is exactly what we find in the plant samples taken from the genuine designs, that the chromosomes have actually been altered. We also find that infrasound is able to boil water in 1 nanosecond, and when it does so, it expands water, just like when you're boiling a cup of tea, and this water that's inside the stems, which is now superheated and expanded, it tries to locate the weakest part of the plant in which to escape. And as it does so, it looks for the node of the plant, which is the plant's knuckles, and it creates a hole in the plant from the inside, and it blows itself outwards. And when it does this, the plant, which is now top-heavy because all the water's escaped, it falls over to the ground because it's been made molten at the base just like a piece of glass, and it re-hardens in its new position. But the consequence to all of this is that the infrasound is able to actually char the stems on the outside, and this, too, we find in the genuine crop circles as well. So to cut 34 pages into one very simple sentence, that's exactly what is one of the technical features of what's creating the designs. It's through its sound. But whatever's doing it is using it to a very, very fine degree in a way that our science simply does not know how to do.
When I'm listening to you speak of this, I think of a scientist that I'm aware of. His name is escaping me right now, but how he wanted to use sound to work as a cure with cancer instead of radiation and chemotherapy, to be able to alter the frequency, since everything is energy, to alternate the frequencies within the diseased or unbalanced cell so that it would come into a different harmony and the body would work with it differently and there'd be a different result. So what you're saying to me, and I am not a physicist, it just clicks in my head. It just absolutely makes sense. And I would agree this is a very refined level of use of what is around us. And I would have to ask you the question, with where you are, and I know we're just about out of time, where do you see yourself with what you've experienced with crop circles? You've written this wonderful book, Secrets in the Field, The Science and Mysticism of Crop Circles. You have evidence, you have data. Where do you see yourself going from here on out?
Well, so far, I think I've gone around the world several times and around the country teaching all of this. Getting people acclimatized to the idea that what you're watching on television is not the truth. It's far from it. And someone is using up a lot of money to convince people that there is no phenomenon, that the whole thing is a big fraud. It couldn't be any different. In fact, I mean, in the art world, we have people who copy paintings all the time, but it does not mean that a Picasso is also a fake. That there is a hoax has to require an original from which to copy. So I teach that as I go around the world, and I'm also teaching the principles of sacred space, how to actually create sacred space in your life, and applying the principles that I find in the crop circles, relate those to ancient sacred structures such as, you know, pyramids and Stonehenge, and then teach people how to actually apply those in their daily life. And I'm finding the most incredible connections. People are creating the most incredible structures, simple things, even in their own living rooms, and they're finding that their level of connection to the other levels of reality are becoming much, much more refined. And one of the biggest things that I've also done was to actually encode the energy of the designs in symbols, which I then place on cards, and this you can only get off my website, by the way. And these cards are being used in healing all around the world right now. So the energy of the crop circles can be transferred to cards using intent. And we're using the energy to encode water homeopathically and also to treat people of all kinds of things.
Okay, so I'm going to have to stop you, Freddie. We are out of time. I need your website, though. Give me your website so we can get that out to people so they can find out more about your cards, etc.
There are three, but the easy one to remember is invisibletemple.com.
Invisibletemple.com. My guest today has been Freddie Silva. His magnificent book is Secrets in the Field. Believe me, your mind will be filled with a lot of thoughts you didn't think you could ever have, or would even be willing to explore before. Something new, something different, something worth becoming aware of. Freddie, thank you so very much for being my guest. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure, Donna. Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Our time has been a little bit different today, but that's okay. We're going to be right back after this. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and if you would like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, this is the time to do it. Telephone lines are now open. In the U.S., it's 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. And I want to be sure that I give you Freddie Silva's website again, because his book about the crop circles is incredible. This is really a must-read. It's invisibletemple.com, invisibletemple.com, and you can find its contact information and all kinds of stuff on that website. Well, I want to tell you, before we know it, it's going to be the month of August, and one of my favorite events of the year is the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. I want to invite you, your family, your friends, your neighbors. Come on out if you're in the state of Washington, even if you're in another part of the country. Fly out if you want. Make time to play and to step back in history. It's the Renaissance. It's absolutely awesome. And when you walk through the castle gates, you will be transformed into a world of imagination that is totally delightful. This all takes place during the first 3 weekends in the month of August. That's August 4th, 5th, 11th, 12th, 18th, and 19th. The hours are from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's being held at the Mentor Creek Ranch at 10215 State Road 302 in Gig Harbor, Washington. And you can go to their website, find out all about the cost for the tickets, etc. They even have a map for you where you can go and see how to get to where you will be going to at the Mentor Creek Ranch. But there's so much that goes on. It is so much fun. And, of course, as I keep telling you, I just have a blast because I'm in costume and I get to dress up and be queen for a day. Absolutely marvelous. But you have foods that are oriented towards that time. We have games. You have a wonderful environment. The Royal Court is there, and you'll see them there. And I just love to watch the expression on the children's faces when they come with their moms and dads and they see all of the fun stuff around. Also, it is very educational, especially for children as well as adults, because there are many craftsmen and craftswomen that are there doing their trades. You get actually to see what they do to create whatever it might be, whether it's toys out of wood or it's special caps or costumes, just wonderful things to see. So it's the Renaissance Fantasy Fair in the state of Washington at the Mentor Creek Ranch at 10215 State Road 302 in Gig Harbor, Washington. I'm going to be there. I'll be doing many consultations, and you can recognize my booth because it'll have a large golden banners with gigantic red lions on them. And it's just a delight to be right there on Main Street. So stop by and say hello. Go to their website, Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair, WashingtonRenaissanceFantasyFair.com, and you'll have all the details that you need. Donna Sebo here, and I wanted to share some information with you. Let me give out our telephone number again, because if you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227 for U.S., 888-815-9756 for Canadians, and also our direct line of 530-876-3222. Risk. And my guest that I've had on today, he risked so much in his life to go from what might have been a very practical environment to explore an unknown environment of interest, history, observation, science. It totally transformed his life, as he expressed during our interview. And Franz Kafka made a statement. He was a writer. He said, from a certain point onward, there's no longer any turning back. That is the point that you must reach. And this is all about the road of risk. Well, what came into my mind was a story about a young man by the name of Billy. And he had a coach. His coach's name was Jackson. And one day, Billy went up to his coach, and he asked if he could talk to him for a moment. And his coach said, sure, what's on your mind? Well, Billy was an athlete, and he was absolutely passionate about swimming. And he went to his coach, and he said, coach, I noticed on the roster that you've got me swimming the backstroke in the relay tomorrow when we compete against Central. And the coach said, yeah. Billy said, well, coach, you know I'm strongest when I swim freestyle. Coach said, well, Billy, I know that that is your absolute best stroke. Billy asked him, he said, coach, I'm confused. If you know what I'm really good at, why do you keep signing me up for races I don't have enough experience in? I mean, the freestyle is my thing. It's really what I should be doing. Why won't you let me keep doing what I'm really super good at? Well, Coach Jackson was not upset with his question. Instead, and I really liked his attitude, he said, Billy, I want to show you something. And he pulled out an old football trophy from a shelf in his office. He said, Billy, I got this trophy when I was about your age. And the funny thing is, I never, ever wanted to play football. I didn't think I'd ever be good at it. I was more of what they called a loner back then. And I preferred sports like swimming and running. That's what I wanted to do. I wasn't interested in football. Well, Billy's curiosity was piqued with the story that the coach was relating to him, so he asked him the question, how did you end up playing football? And this is what Coach Jackson told him. He said, it was because of my dad. My dad convinced me that I would be a better person if I occasionally stepped outside of my comfort zone and tried new things. And he was right. So putting the trophy back gave Billy a chance to think about what the coach had said. And so he looked at the coach when the coach turned around and was looking him directly in the eye. And Billy said, Coach, does this mean that I have to swim the backstroke even though I'd rather not? And Coach Jackson said to him, what it means is that if you ever want to be better than you are now, you'll have to go outside of your comfort zone to achieve your true potential. Have to go outside of your comfort zone to achieve your true potential. And I think as individuals, we need to remember that. We need to remember it, because if we don't, we're going to be stuck in a rut. We're going to be stuck in such a rut that we're frustrated. We get irritated. We feel that life doesn't have very much to offer us. And we usually will end up sitting in our pity pots wondering why we can never get any further than the lid to climb out of them. You must be willing to step outside the box. Trying something new. It can be anything from a new recipe. It can be dressing differently. It can be going to some place you've never been before. It can be taking a class on a subject matter that you would automatically think would be the most boring thing in the world. And if you are willing to step outside that comfort zone to explore, you may have this amazing experience of discovering who you are as a person in a whole new way. And that's what happened with my guest, Freddie Silva. And I'm so glad it happened to him, because it has added so much perspective to what I understood about crop circles. It has totally given me an expanded view of it. And from a view through someone else's eyes that has spent 17 years in research on this, and it transformed their lives and their thinking, their life and their thinking. And so the same thing can happen to you. Now, it doesn't have to be the crop circles. It can be something entirely different. But it is your responsibility to understand that part of who you are is an expansive, growing expression of life. Isn't that a wonderful visualization? You're expanding. You're growing. Not getting older. I mean, everybody has a chronological age they can deal with. But your world doesn't have to have that limitation. And I find the most interesting people in life, no matter what their age, are those who have this wonderful curiosity. Wonderful curiosity. You never know what you're going to discover. And I'm just going to talk about something frivolous here for a moment. I'll tell you what I discovered today. I had been picking some blueberries. We have blueberry bushes around our property, and so I was picking some of the blueberries. And in the course of doing that, then I noticed that some weeds needed to be pulled up around some plants, and so I started doing that, and lo and behold, I see this tiny, tiny little spider. But what amazed me about the spider is that it was a brilliant white, and it had this red line down its body. And it, to me, it looked like some masterful artist had painted this creature. But it is living in the earth. It lives in my backyard. I never knew it existed there before. So I want to see if I can find out what kind of a spider it is. And if any of you know what kind of a spider that is, I'd be very curious about it. But I've never seen that before. I've seen white spiders. You never know what you're going to discover. And like I said, that's sort of a frivolous statement. But you have to be open. You need to be willing to look. You need to be able to keep your eyes, your sensory system, alert and aware. And that is what happens when you start developing your intuition. When you start paying attention to your sensory system, you start reading information. And that's what I do when I'm on the air with anybody that calls in. And by the way, the number is 877-876-5227 for U.S. or Canadians, 888-815-9756. I know we had a caller earlier, and I want to say I'm sorry I wasn't able to take you at that time because we had an adjustment in timing on the show today. However, understand that's part of the process that helped me start developing my understanding of mind. And believe me, I've only scratched the surface. There's so much I don't understand or know. But I'm happy to share whatever I do know, because that's what life is all about. It's that constant exploration. It's that going beyond what you would expect to go beyond. It's really quite amazing. And what's exciting is that you'll never know it all. It is just not humanly possible. That's wonderful. That means you never ever need to get bored, and you are going to find that your life is so rich because you are open and receptive to opportunity. I wanted to also share with you a story about a man today. His name is Scott Harrison, and he was the founder of Cure International. He's an orthopedic surgeon. And lots of times we have attitudes about medicine, and some of them are justified and some of them are not. But we need to remember there are those dedicated professionals who go through many, many years of training to be able to become quite skilled in what they do. I think we often make a mistake with doctors trying to put them up on pedestals, and they're human beings, just like the rest of us, who are trying to do the best with the knowledge that they have. And they're always learning and growing, too, if they're a good physician. This gentleman had been a U.S. Army captain in Vietnam, and he had opened up a chain of highly successful rehab hospitals. Now, he had a good amount of business sense, and with the time that he decided that he no longer wanted to oversee these hospitals, he sold the business and was financially well off for the rest of his life. And he really found that with his affluence, that was wonderful. That was something that was a tremendous blessing. He had earned it. He and his wife wanted to do more. And they decided they were going to make philanthropic medical missions to Africa. And in 1990, there was an orthopedic corporation that offered him the job of being their CEO. And he said, for 4 years, I battled with corporate raiders, banks, and he said it was just really a lot of work. It wasn't fun, wasn't pleasurable, it was just a lot of intense stress, pressure. And he finally got this company to a point where it could be sold, and that blessed his life even more. He said, but during the time that he was dealing with this environment, his wife passed away, or his daughter, excuse me, passed away. And he said he was very despondent. His daughter's name was Anne. So he decided that he was going to work with disabled children. And he founded an organization called Cure International, and hospitals were opened to treat children with afflictions like cleft palates, spina bifida, burns, broken bones. And this man, he along with his wife, whose name is Sally, the two of them have developed 3 hospitals in Africa, 2 in Central America, and 1 in Afghanistan. And with their wealth, with their determination, they are planning on having 50 hospitals around the world to benefit those that need good medical care. Now, this is a man with all of this affluence. He didn't have to do that. But he's decided that his life has to have a mission. And though his daughter was killed in an accident, and that transformed their lives on so many different levels, he and his wife have, with all of the blessings that they've acquired, decided that they're going to make a commitment to other people in life as well. Because after all, that's what it's all about. This is Donna Sebo, and I'm so delighted that we've had this time together. I'm sorry we missed the caller earlier, but I'll just know you're going to be able to call in tomorrow. And speaking of tomorrow, we've got a fabulous guest. We're going to be talking about acupressure. Have you ever wanted to try it? Well, Dr. John Sherman is going to be my guest, and he's going to tell us how we can do it on ourselves. That's right, and it's natural. It's something that can really benefit you tremendously. So we're going to be having Dr. John Sherman, and I want to remind you, don't forget to go explore the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair website. I'm going to be appearing there. I've been with this group for a number of years. It is a phenomenal family event, so why not stop by their website, check it out, If you're in the state of Washington, put it on your calendar. The event is going to be going on for the first 3 weekends in August, and it is a fabulous, fabulous activity. I recommend it highly, and I don't think anybody really is ever disappointed at any time. It is so much fun. Even if it rains, people have a blast out there. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Let your light shine, and don't forget that exploring. You're too young to not be able to find something new. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.